The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 18, text number 49, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on December 17th, 2015, in Phoenix, Mauritius.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Iti Putra Krita Aghena Sa Anutapta Mahamuni Svayam Vipakrita Lagya Na Eva Agham Tat Achintayat Iti Putra Krita Aghena Sonutapto Mahamuni Svayam Praprakrito Ragya Naivagam Tad Achintayat Iti Putra Krita Ghena Sonutapto Mahamuni Svayam prakaprika ragya Naivagam tad achintayat Iti thus Putra son Krita done by Aghena by the sin Sah The Muni, Anutapta, regretting Mahamuni, the sage, Svayam, personally, Viprakrita, being so insulted, Ragya, by the king, Na. Not Eva, certainly, Agham, the sin, Tat, that, Achintayat, thought of it. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. Purport. The whole incident is now cleared up. Maharaj Parikshit's garlanding the sage with a dead snake was not at all a very serious offense. But Sringi's cursing the king was a serious offense. The serious offense was committed by a foolish child only. Therefore, he deserved to be pardoned by the Supreme Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. Maharaj Parikshit also did not mind the curse offered to him by a foolish Brahmin. On the contrary, he took full advantage of the awkward situation, and by the great will of the Lord, Maharaj Parikshit achieved the highest perfection of life through the grace of Srila Shukadev Goswami. Actually, it was the desire of the Lord, and Maharaj Parikshit, Shamakarishi, and his son Sringi were all instrumental in fulfilling the desire of the Lord. So none of them were put into difficulty because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Person.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatha Padakamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatarine.
It's an interesting point here made by Prabhupada. So none of them were put into difficulty because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Lord. This is a very telling statement, very deep with meaning statement. Do you want to be not in difficulty in your life? Or do you want to be in difficulty in your life? You have a choice. You have the power of being either being in difficulty or not being in difficulty. If you will take hint from Srila Prabhupada here, you will learn the art how to never, ever, ever be in any difficulty. Wouldn't that be great? Well, we can do it. We can do it. We can be in a state where we're never in any difficulty. You simply have to learn the art of how to do everything in relation to the Lord. What does that mean, to do everything in relation with the Lord? What is our present state of mentality? To do everything in relation with myself. You see, I'm the center. That's the difficulty. We have difficulties now because we put ourselves in the center. Do you understand this point? That's why we have difficulties. We put ourselves in the center. As soon as you stop doing things, everything in relation to yourself, and start doing everything in relation to Krishna, difficulty is gone. It's interesting. Prabhupada has a famous saying of Prabhupada. What is the difficulty? Shudakirti Prabhu wrote his book like that. You read that book? It's an amazing book. What is the difficulty? Prabhupada would often say, what is the difficulty? But it really boils down to the difficulty is I'm putting myself in the center. That's why there's difficulty. The problem is, the difficulty is, we've been doing this for millions and billions of lifetimes. We've been putting ourselves in the center as demigods, as human beings, as animals, as plants, as germs even. We were putting ourselves in the center. That's the trouble. We're habituated since time immemorial to put ourselves in the center. You understand this point? That is a difficulty. It's called egotism instead of Krishnaism. Is it? So we have to kick out this egotistical tendency that we have for doing everything in relation to ourselves and start learning how to do everything in relation with Krishna. That's the key. There's a name for this. It's called Krishna consciousness. Have you heard that term before, Krishna consciousness? It's not an empty slogan. It's a scientific term. This is a science. We're not just sentimentalists here doing some sectarian religion. This is a science of how to get back to your original pure self. Krishna consciousness is what we need instead of self-consciousness. You see? Of course, we did not deny the self. The Mayavadis try to solve self-consciousness by saying there is no self, or the self is impersonal. See, the Buddhists say there is no self. The impersonalists say there is a self, but it doesn't have any personality. These are two futile attempts to get rid of this disease of self-consciousness. Try to negate it. That doesn't work, you see. It's like saying, well, I go to the doctor. Doctor, I have a headache, you know. What can I do? He said, well, I'll cut off your head. I have a guillotine in the other room. I'll get rid of your headache right now. We'll just cut off your head. You see. This is what the Buddhists and the impersonalists try to do. Well, just cut off your head. No problem. We'll get rid of your headache immediately. Cut off your head. But that doesn't work. It's not practical. Even if you can undergo great penances and austerities, Aruya Krishchena. Krishchena means by great difficulty, with great difficulty, Krishchena. With great difficulty, undergoing penances and austerities for thousands and millions of years, Lord Brahma confirms in the Brahma Samhita, even after doing this Krishchena, this, with great difficulty, they merge into Brahman. What happens? Patanti yadho, they fall back again to material existence. So what is the use of all this? It's futile. This impersonalism and voidism is futile because it doesn't bring you to the purpose, the point of actual liberation. They call it mukti, sayuja mukti, but... Huh? It's vimukti, actually. Yes, that's right. It's not really liberation. It's quasi-liberation. I'll give you an example. Many years ago when I was a brahmachari serving in our Dallas temple, I'm talking the summer of 1972, I mean many years ago, we had our regular Sunday feast program. So we got a call. There was some inmate at a prison about 20 miles east of Dallas, a low security prison, who wanted to come to the Sunday program, and he had gotten a pass from the warden. He could come. He had to come back that night. So I drove out 20 miles east of Dallas on Interstate 30, picked him up, brought him to the Sunday feast. He had a great time. I had to drive him back after the feast, back to the prison, you see. So that's the Yuja Mukti. You get out, you're not really, you appear to be liberated, but you're not really liberated, you see. It seemed like, well, he's out of prison now. Was he really out of prison? No, he still had a cord, a subtle cord that connected him with the prison. And as soon as the feast was over, I drove him back to the prison, you see. So Sayuja Mukti is like that. It appears that you're liberated, but actually you're not really liberated. It only appears to be liberation. And therefore, it's called Vimukti. Vimukti Maninas means liberation in the mind only. Vimukti Maninas. But in Krishna consciousness, you see, you get actually liberated. Truly, factually liberated. Punar janmana vijate, he never takes birth again. You see? You're truly liberated. You do that by taking out this tendency to do everything in relation to yourself and learning the art of how to do everything in relation with Krishna. Well, what do we do? What does everything include? Have you psychoanalyzed yourself to see what everything includes? Well, there's three things. There's your thoughts, there's your words, and your deeds. So now you know what you'd be looking at. You should psychoanalyze yourself. Am I always thinking in relation with Krishna? Seeing Krishna as the center? Everything is for his satisfaction? Or am I still thinking everything is for my satisfaction? In the spiritual world, no one thinks that everything is for their satisfaction. Everyone simply thinks that everything is for the satisfaction of Krishna. Now we think everything should be for my satisfaction. That's our disease. We want to do everything for our own satisfaction. That doesn't work. It's like that pop song, you know. Rolling Stones. I can't get no satisfaction. You see. Everyone thinking, I need to get satisfaction. actually, you're not meant to get satisfaction. We could tell Mick Jagger, you're saying, I can get no satisfaction. You're not meant to get satisfaction. You are meant constitutionally to give satisfaction. You see? This mentality, I have to get satisfied. That's bogus. You're not supposed to get satisfied. You're supposed to give satisfaction. And that's how you get satisfied. You see? You understand? Instead of trying to get satisfaction, learn how to give satisfaction. That is Krishna consciousness. And that brings you to the actual position of liberation, where you're unlimitedly satisfied at every minute on an equal level with the satisfaction that Krishna experiences. Can you imagine the satisfaction that Krishna feels at every minute? It's inconceivable how satisfied Krishna feels at every minute. As being Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that satisfaction that Krishna experiences is experienced equally with his devotees, and if you may be amazed to hear, it's described in the scriptures, the devotee becomes even more satisfied than Krishna. You mean, what? The devotee can feel more satisfied than Krishna feels? Yes. That's why Krishna became Lord Chaitanya. You see? What is this? I'm the supreme enjoyer. Nobody is more satisfied than me. But this girl now, I see that she's getting more satisfaction by serving me than I'm experiencing by being served by her. Therefore, Krishna doesn't want to be outdone by anybody. He's the supreme. Therefore, I will also taste the satisfaction this girl tastes by serving me. I will take her complexion and her mood. Her name, Gaurangi, or Radharani. She is sometimes called Gaurangi because she has beautiful golden limbs. The beautiful golden-limbed girl, Gaurangi, you see. So Krishna says, I will take that mood, and I will take that color of this girl, and I'll become my own devotee so I can get more satisfaction. So don't feel that satisfying Krishna, doing everything for the satisfaction of Krishna, is going to leave you high and dry without any satisfaction. That's how you get unlimited satisfaction, so much so that God Himself will want to experience the satisfaction that you are experiencing. You understand? So therefore, we really have to learn how to do this. Get serious about it. Being a Hare Krishna doesn't mean just wearing tilak and a sari and coming to the temple. That's external. That's important. But you have to do it on the inside also. Otherwise, you're cheating yourself. Simply being a devotee externally, we have to do that because it helps us. It's good to go through the externals. That's part of sadhana bhakti. But you have to understand, what do we sing every morning? Bahir nasingha hridaye nasingha. Krishna conscious externally and internally, you see. Internally and externally both. So while we're doing the externals very nicely, or whatever duties we're given by our spiritual master, by our temple president, by our GBCs, whatever duty, by our guru, whatever we're given, we do those very nicely. At the same time, we have to work on this thing on the inside, which is transferring our consciousness from doing everything in relation to ourselves to doing everything in relation with Krishna. As I mentioned, there are three things: thoughts, words, and deeds. I should only think in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. I should only speak in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. And I should only act in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Now, if you will really get serious about transcendentalizing your thoughts, I can guarantee you, then it's easy to, the other things follow automatically. But however you're thinking, that will come out in your speech unavoidably. You may try to fake it, pretend that you're Krishna conscious, but it doesn't work. If you're not Krishna conscious in your thoughts, your words will reveal you sooner or later. And your actions will reveal you sooner or later. If you want to have words and actions that are truly Krishna conscious, then work very seriously to discipline your thoughts by always being Krishna conscious in everything you think about. If you see your mind going off the track, and it does go off the track all the time, therefore Krishna says, yato yato nishchalati manaschantalamashtaram, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must suddenly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. You see, the mind's a naughty child, and you, the devotee, have to be like the mother. You see, you have to use your intelligence. There's two aspects of the subtle body we're talking about right now. There's the mind and the intelligence. The intelligence is superior. Just as the mother is superior to the child, the intelligence is superior to the mind. If the mother lets the kid do whatever he wants, he becomes a spoiled brat, eventually becomes a criminal when he grows up. The mother has to keep the child under discipline. So your intelligence, which you have, is the mother of your mind, the lord, the controller of your mind. So you have to actually use your intelligence, and intelligence is gotten by hearing from the guru, by hearing from sadhus, by hearing from the scriptures, and understanding what the teachings of Krishna consciousness actually are. Properly understanding these teachings, this will give you intelligence. And with that intelligence, now you have to discipline your mind, you see. You have to say, okay, mind, no, don't do that. You see. Yeah, oh yes, mind, now you're properly. This is proper mind. Like the mother says, don't do that, do this. You have to be like that with your mind. If your mind does some nonsense, no, stop thinking about that. That's not right. This is what you have to think about, my dear mind. We have great examples of acharyas who do this. They control their mind very carefully. Govinda Das, you know that bhajan. Bajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya charanara vindare. My dear mind, please keep yourself always nicely engaged in the devotional service of the son of Nanda Maharaj. That's the soft approach. Prabhupada says the acharya has two approaches. He's soft as a rose and he is strict as a thunderbolt. You see? So you can be as soft as a rose with your mind. You can say, my dear mind, please engage yourself in the devotional service of the divine son of Nanda Maharaj. And then there's the thunderbolt approach taught by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He says, in the morning, you should beat your mind 100 times with shoes. And in the evening, you beat your mind 100 times with broomstick. You see? So that's the heavy approach. The lightning bolt, thunderbolt approach. So whatever it takes, you say, well, Gurudev, well, Guru Maharaj, when should I use the stick and when should I be heavy with my mind and when should I be soft with my mind? Whatever you need according to time, place, and circumstance. You have to intelligently learn when you need to get heavy with yourself and when you can be sweet with yourself. You see? You have to see what works. But if you only want to be sweet and soft with yourself, you're on the wrong track. You've got to get heavy with yourself sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes you need to get very heavy with yourself. Very, very heavy with yourself. Some people want to chant 16 rounds. They can't do it because they're too light with themselves. They're not heavy enough for themselves. This is life and death. If you don't chant 16 rounds, if you can't develop the ability to chant 16 rounds, you're not going to go back to Godhead. That's all there is to it. What's the use of going to work and going to a job, going to studying in the university if you're not going to go back to Godhead? What's the use of it? So you have to learn how to get heavy. We don't say don't work, don't go to school, but you have to understand this is the only true necessity of human life, to develop your ability to absorb yourself 24 hours a day in Krishna's service. That's the only thing that's really worth doing. The other stuff is just for some bodily maintenance, that's all. It's just for bodily maintenance. Your real thing is you have to reconnect with Krishna. So I'm going on a bit here. I mean, maybe there's some questions. I can try to answer the questions. To be overconfident in spiritual life can be dangerous at times. How can the devotee assess his self-confidence? Well, we should be... There's no such thing as being overly confident in Krishna and Guru. As far as ourselves go, we should have zero confidence. For yourself, you should be absolutely underconfident, and for Guru and Krishna, you should be... And there's no question of overconfidence. Can you briefly tell us about the Dhammaparad? To consider the holy Dham is a place for material sense gratification. What is the difference between Mahaprasadam and Prasadam? Well, it's described differently. Sometimes Mahaprasad is described the deity, the Prasadam that's offered to the deity. And that's one way that it's described. And it's not directly on the deity's plate. Srila Prabhupada says that child worship is more important than deity worship. Where does Prabhupada say that? It may have been some mother who was raising her child in Krishna consciousness, and she was neglecting her child to do deity worship. Maybe, I think there was some letter like that. Our most important, you see, we have two things. There's preaching and deity worship. The most important thing is the preaching, but the deity worship is also part of that preaching. Actually, deity worship, for us, deity worship is preaching. By worshiping the deity nicely, then people will come and they will be inspired. So our deity worship is also preaching. But in terms of raising your child and worshiping the deities, the most important aspect is to see that your child is becoming Krishna conscious. If you neglect your child and just take care of the deity, that's not proper. The intelligent thing to do is engage the child in assisting. Especially in home deity worship, you can do that, you see. Child can learn how to, you know. I remember one disciple, even the child was too young to do anything, the father would be cutting vegetables for the Sunday feast. He would give the son a plastic knife and some scraps and let him think he was also cutting vegetables. You see. The father's cutting actual with a real knife, and the son had a little, like a toy knife, not a real knife, and just some scraps. And then, yes, I'm also cutting vegetables. A little baby boy, you see. He's dirty. He can't really even touch the vegetables. Let him be a little, have a toy cutting the vegetables experience, you see. So in this way, you can engage the children in assisting in the deity worship. When they're too little, then gradually as they become more old enough to stay a little clean, then they can actually, you know, dry the plates and engage them also. Tell me, yes.
I don't know, this reminds me of the story about Brahman, who had the deities, and they were playing, the kids were playing the deities. So deities are also children, so they should not be neglected also.
The deities are also
children.
The deity makes himself in the position like a child.
Yes.
That's a fact. You have to take care of the deity just like you take care of a child. Krishna puts himself like a child in deity worship, you see. We have to take care of him. We have to feed him. We have to dress him. Normally, an adult dresses himself, you see. A little child, you have to dress him. So Krishna makes himself like a child so we can serve him more. What are the ways and techniques the temple authorities can use to monitor the proper spiritual progress of a devotee? Is this from the temple? I don't think the temple authorities are asking this question. Are they? Are you asking? No. Yeah. Well, why don't you just monitor your own Krishna consciousness instead of thinking how the temple authorities can monitor your Krishna consciousness? You see? Don't be lazy. Expect the temple authorities to pull you out of Maya. You master the art of controlling your own senses. Is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with taking in the mind to do good rounds equal to austerity? Yes, it is an austerity, the mind. Actually, we have a tendency to cheat, to do cheating japa, you know, not really pronounce at all. to, you know, get it over as fast as possible without really absorbing our sin. That's a tendency to cheat in japa. So we have to become honest in our japa. And it's an austerity because you have to take time away from sleeping and eating, you see, to absorb yourself in the name of Krishna. So it is an austerity. But it's the greatest austerity you can do. This is a ridiculous question. Is it true the Hare Krishna movement is a concocted movement? I mean, wow, what a ridiculous question. Concocted movement. This movement is the manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. If you know, this question is the most ridiculous question I've seen in a long time. This is the manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Can we complete our japa rounds while driving? Yeah, if somebody else does the driving and you're riding in the car, you could do it. But if you're driving and you're chanting your rounds at the same time, it's nam aparad, because it's inattentive. Either you say, well, I'm fully paying attention to my rounds, that means you're going to have an accident. But I'm Gurudev, I'm fully paying attention to my japa. Yeah, you'll have an accident for sure. But you have to pay attention to the road when you're driving. That means your full attention is not in the name. So Tamal Krishna Goswami said, no, that was for clicker, yeah. Actually, the rounds you chant while driving don't count. It's for 16. Now, if you're riding, that's another thing. If you're a passenger, that's okay. You can totally, you know, cut off as a passenger. If you're riding in the bus, or you can do it. If you're a passenger in a bus or an airplane, just like we ride flying the airplanes, we chant our rounds on the airplane, you see. So, if you're a passenger, there's no problem. If you're the driver, you cannot. It's offense. How to stop dust from coming when we try to put the dust out? That's he's talking about the mental dust. If you'll fill your mind with Krishna, you see, Krishna is so wonderful, he's so beautiful, he's so fabulous, he's so unbelievably tasteful, that the dust of lust will not be appealing anymore. It will just naturally go away. When crying for Krishna, how could it not be artificial? You have to genuinely desire to develop your love of God. That's all. Can we perform Tulsi Puja and Guru Puja before the deities at home if we don't have the facility to do so separately at home? Actually, Guru Puja, Prabhupada let us do Guru Puja before the deities. There was no harm. Tulsi, the reason we don't do Tulsi Puja is because you're not supposed to circumambulate in front of the deities. That's fine. But anybody can get a screen or a curtain. You should have something like that. You should have a way of closing the curtain. You don't have a curtain, you get a little like these divider screens. You should have something. You're doing Tulsi Puja. That's our etiquette. Why it is important to observe Ekadasi? What happens at times if we fail to do so? You're in big trouble if you don't follow Ekadasi. You're putting your spiritual life in danger. One devotee told me that we are not qualified to worship Radha Krishna. Rather, we should worship Lakshmi Narayan. Yes, we are worshiping Radha Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan with opulence. Our Radha Krishna worship is, we treat them like an opulent. We worship them with opulence. This is how Prabhupada trained us. Radha Krishna worship is like the gopas and the gopis in the forest. We're not on that level. We worship them with opulence. All kinds of fancy outfits and opulent offerings. This is the right mood for us. I read one of your electronic answers to questions posted on the website Back to Home. I was really impressed about the answer given to a person inquiring about the manifestation of the form of Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. I have been following ISKCON for so many years, didn't have an idea about them. Can you please tell us again about the manifestation? Yeah, there was one pastime, actually, the devotees were at Kurukshetra, and there was a tent, and Rohini was talking with, who was it she was talking with?
Devaki.
About the, because they had witnessed Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, you see. So they were, and they were outside of Vrindavan now, but they were, it's like considered too confidential for the devotees in general, like a secret, you know. The Vrindavan pastimes, what they were like. So as I remember reading Subhadra Devi, I think it's in the Skanda Purana it's mentioned, but Subhadra Devi was opposed at the door to keep everybody, not let anybody in. It's too confidential. But she was listening to it. She was hearing it, and she went into complete ecstasy. Her body developed transcendental symptoms. Her eyes became very big, her arms went into this ecstatic mood, and Krishna Balaram also came along. What's going on? And they listened, and the same thing happened to them. They went into this ecstasy, their arms shrunk into their bodies, and their heads became big, and their eyes became big, and they got these big, huge grins on their face in this ecstasy of hearing about Vrindavan. So, Jagannath Balaram and Subhadra, this is Krishna Balaram and then Krishna's sister. In the mood of in tasting the ecstasy of hearing about Vrindavan Leela, they're going into state of ecstasy. That's why the inner meaning of Ratha Yatra is to take Krishna back to Vrindavan. I am lazy and not serious into practicing Krishna consciousness. What to do? Beat your mind with shoes, Prabhu. Don't be lazy, don't be crazy. You're cutting your own throat by doing that. Become serious now that I must become the pure devotee of Krishna. That's it. I have no other duty, no other business, no other consideration except to become a pure devotee and spread Krishna consciousness to the suffering people of this world. How come that only when the guru is there in the temple, the disciple attends classes and morning programs, and when they disappear, when the guru is gone? That means the devotees are an illusion. Devotees are on the level thinking the spiritual master is his body. They are called neophytes, are neo-unfits. You think the spiritual master is only present in his body, you're a fool and a rascal. The spiritual master is fully present and even more present in his vibrations, which means his instructions. Prabhupada ordered us, every initiated devotee must attend morning and evening classes. So, you know, you got your orders from Prabhupada. If you're initiated, you are ordered by Prabhupada to attend morning and evening classes. If your schedule doesn't allow it, then you have to do it somehow on your own. At home. Or, you know, hearing a lecture on the way to work with your headphones. Something. You need to study twice a day. Prabhupada said morning and evening class, every initiated devotee must do. So if you're not doing that, you're not a follower of Prabhupada. That's all. You're not following Prabhupada. You're following your mind. Your mind has become your Prabhupada. Good luck. You see. The temple is here. The class is here every day, isn't it? We have classes every day. As far as possible, come every day for class here. If it's not practical for you because your work schedule, then you have to study on your own. You can have you and your wife can read, have discussed Bhagavatam together, have your own study at home. It's not practical to come here because of your work schedule. But as far as possible, every devotee should come to their nearest ISKCON center every day for class. That's a fact. Any other questions? We've run out of the sheets. To defend ourselves when being attacked by someone by deadly weapons. And Vasudeva Dutta, he took the worm back to his body being attacked by leprosy. So the question is, what can we do then? I remember I didn't see it documented, but I heard that Prabhupada said that if somebody comes to kill me, I will stand over the door with a brick. And here's a bona fide one. Back in 1972, some demons came to New Vrindavan with guns. It was very heavy. You may have heard the story. They smashed the deities. They ordered all the devotees to get down on the floor. They took Kirtan and Anamars up on the hill and said, "Now you dig your own grave. You dig your grave, I'm going to shoot you." He was actually up there under gun, digging his own grave, getting ready to be murdered by these kundas. But then when they smashed Radha Vrindavan Chandra, there was a mystical, when they broke the deities, this mystical sound vibrated the whole area. It could be heard all the way up the hill. This a very eerie sound. And it completely freaked out these gunas, and they left. Prabhupada had them glue the deities back together again, and they're actually being worshipped now. Normally, if a deity is broken, you throw them away, but Prabhupada said, no, you repair them. So the deities have been repaired, and they're beautiful now again. And after that, Prabhupada said, he authorized us to have guns in our temples to protect ourselves. And he said, give me a japa beads in one hand and a gun in the other hand, and I will protect you. So we did that. We had a gun in our temple, and in Miami, our Miami temple, the treasurer had a gun there in the treasury. So one night during milk prasadam, in those days we all took milk prasadam every evening. That was the standard. Every night, Krishna book and hot milk. So you're all sitting in the prasadam room taking hot milk. All of a sudden, some armed bandits show up. Oh my God. They had one Brahmacharini like this. Right? They put her hand on her mouth and they had a gun in her head. She would go, they had the gun in her head. They said, everybody get on the floor. They ordered us to get on the floor. But I was thinking, what is this nonsense? I was sitting there on the stairs looking down on the room. And I yelled out, Nrisingadev! Well, that Brahmacharini was no longer had the gun in her head. Now the gun was pointed at me. So I said, I think I better negotiate with these guys now. You know, they had a pistol and a rifle. And one guy had a stocking over his head. A couple of black guys, you know. This is a pretty heavy scene. You know? And the gun was pointing at me. I said, "Let me negotiate with these fellows." I said, "We're your friends. What do you want?" He said, "The money. Where's the money?" Actually, they didn't realize the temple treasury was right there adjoining the temple. And there was no sign that said treasury on the door. But actually, that was the treasury just through the door. So our temple president, Abhiram Prabhu, who's still a fixed-up devotee, you know, he came out of the door. He's a very cool-headed temple president. Very cool-headed. He came out the door. He didn't know. He came out to get his milk for the evening, right? Milk prasadam. He comes out the door and sees all the devotees on the floor at gunpoint. He was shocked. He went. But he was also very intelligent. He knew there was a gun in the treasury. He turned around to go back to the treasury, and the thieves didn't like that, so they came up and hit him on the head with the butt of the gun and cut him on the head. Not seriously. He didn't knock him out, just a little blood flowing out of his head. They hit him on the head with the gun, didn't knock him out. But he was very intelligent. I never forget his cool-headed intelligence. He said out loud, clearly, everybody in the whole room could hear him. He said, "Get the gun." He told the treasurer, who was sitting there at the desk with the gun right there in the drawer. He said, "Get the gun and shoot the bastards." And that's all they had to hear. They were gone. They took off running like scared rabbits. And the In those days, the temple president was as practically as good as Prabhupada. Whatever he said, you did it. So the temple the treasurer grabbed that gun. Pow! He shot as they were running out. He missed them. The bullet went into the wall. But so Prabhupada authorized us to have guns, you see, after we were attacked by guns at New Vrindavan. So this is not artificial, you see. We're not aggressors, okay? But if an aggressor comes to kill you, you have the right to kill him. That's Vedic injunction. They're right there in the Bhagavad Gita. Six kind of aggressors can be killed. So if someone comes to kill you, you can kill him first. If someone comes to kill you, you can kill him. You have the authority to kill him. That's our Vedic principles. The police warned us about them. I don't know what the law is here. They said, if that happens, make sure to drag him back into your house. The body back into your house. Because if you kill somebody outside, you can be in trouble for murder. But if you kill somebody in your own house, it means they were coming to attack you. The police one time said, make sure to drag the body back into the house. So yes, we can defend ourselves, and Prabhupada authorized us to defend ourselves. That's Vedic injunction, that an aggressor can be killed. There's no sin in killing an aggressor. Prabhupada, Gandhi said, if someone came to rape my daughter, I would remain nonviolent. Prabhupada said that was completely nonsense, you see. He actually said, if someone comes to rape my daughter, I remain nonviolent. That's nonsense. We are not followers of Gandhi. Nonviolence. If violence is necessary for Krishna, we will use it. Just like recently in Bulgaria, during the Ratha Yatra, two huge demons came and they were physically attacking the devotees. But I have two disciples, farm boys, two stout, and they're not fat, but they're big muscles. They're farm boys. They grew up on the farm. And they know how to work their bodies. Nitai Chandra and Gaurav Chandra. They laid those demons on their backs. They bloodied those demons and put a stop. These demons were beating up the devotees. The innocent devotees celebrating Ratha Yatra being bloodied by these demons. My two boys, they bloodied those demons and put a stop to the bloodying of the devotees. So if necessary, we can bloody up the demons. Protect the devotees from being bloodied, you see. Practical Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
What I wanted to boss you is that here Krishna says that we have to be ourselves, and you can see the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that first name of having a body of leprosy.
Can't my hearing is a little deficient. What is he saying? Can someone who speaks clear English that I can understand the point? Now, a devotee is very humble. One devotee was putting the worms back in his body when they fell out. That's true. But we don't have to artificially imitate that. If someone comes to kill me, I could say, all right, go ahead and kill me, but I have a duty to my spiritual master to preach Krishna consciousness in this world, you see. Another example is Sanatan Goswami. He had sores all over his body and they were oozing out pus, and it was gross. He had some skin disease came upon him, and he had... And Lord Chaitanya would embrace him with great affection. All this pus would get all over Lord Chaitanya's body when he would embrace Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami felt so bad that I'm contaminating Lord Chaitanya with this pus from the sores in my body. Better I just commit suicide. Lord Chaitanya chastised him. He said, I have so much service to do using your body. You don't have any right to kill it. So we have to understand we have a duty to protect this body. Because our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, they have many things they want to accomplish using our bodies to do that. So for the service of Guru and Krishna, we have to protect the bodies.
If someone comes to cut off our arm, we don't allow them to do that. Does that answer your question?
What was the mood of Vasudeva when he was
putting the worms back in? The mood was he didn't want somebody to go hungry. This was their food. He thought, how can I deny them their food? The poor creatures will go hungry if I don't let them eat meat. You see his humility, his mood of service. The devotee cares for all living creatures. If I don't let them eat meat, how will they go hungry? I have to let them eat me. What's that?
Wasn't the devotee's body was already suffering?
Already what?
Already suffering.
Already. Already what?
He had a disease. And the worms were growing in there, so he was giving.
Already diseased. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so does that satisfy you? All right. Any other questions? All right, we'll stop here, and we thank you all very, very much for coming to Bhagavatam class today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanandi!
Maharaj ki.